It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. ...51 degrees in Kodiak under fair skies. It's turning out to be a beautiful, if blustery, day. At the airport, they have west winds steady at 20, gusting to 30, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for these sunny-type conditions to continue for the rest of the day. High near 55, northwest winds to 20 to 30. And mostly clear of a night, too, with a low around 44 and west winds to 15, gusting to 25. Look for rain to begin tomorrow afternoon with increasing clouds tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, hundreds of people packed the Bethel High School gym to honor Eugene Buzzy Piltola. And a new vaccine will be available for infants who are susceptible to the RSV virus. And Sitka is doing record-breaking business in the cruise ship business. Some Sitkans are calling for a cap in the number of passengers allowed to visit their town. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Five Americans detained for years in Iran are coming home. A pivotal moment captured on a tarmac in Doha, Qatar, where the group emerged from a plane today and were met by officials preparing to get them back to the United States and reunited with family. NPR's Peter Kenyon has more.
The Americans now free include Emad Sharji, Murad Tabaz, and Simak Namazi. Namazi was the longest-held American by Iran since the 1979 Islamic Revolution, having been arrested in 2015. In a statement, Namazi says his joy at soon being able to see his family again is, quote, laced with sorrow for the people still in Iranian prisons for, in his words, reporting the truth, for worshiping their God, for being a woman, for nothing. Namazi adds that, quote, as a hostage, 2,898 days of what should have been the best days of my life were stolen from me and supplanted with torment. Despite the prisoner swap, relations between Washington and Tehran remain tense over Iran's nuclear program, among other things. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
The U.S. is granting clemency to five Iranians in U.S. custody. Washington has also agreed to unfreeze $6 billion of Iranian funds that were held in South Korea on the condition the funds only be used for humanitarian purposes. Expert Vali Nasser, professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, says the prisoner's release coincides with Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi's visit to the U.S. this week.
He's coming to the United States for the United Nations General Assembly, and I think he was very keen to have this finished before he arrived so that the continued holding of the prisoners would not become the dominant topic of his visit.
Today, Raisi suggested the deal could be used to build trust between the United States and Iran. Comedian Russell Brand has postponed a series of tour dates in the U.K. after four women publicly accused him of sexual assault. NPR's Anastasia Siulka says he has also been dropped by his management company.
Russell Brand was supposed to finish a U.K. tour with appearances in Windsor, Wolverhampton, and Plymouth. Those dates have been postponed after four women said that Brand had allegedly assaulted them between 2006 and 2013. Brand has denied all the allegations in a video posted to YouTube, saying all his encounters have been consensual. After the report was published, London's Metropolitan Police announced it had received another accusation about a sexual assault Brand allegedly committed in 2003. In further fallout, Brand's publishing deal with the imprint Bluebird has been suspended, and his now former management company announced it has dropped him from its roster. Anastasia Tsiolkis, NPR News, New York.
This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Several hundred people packed into the Bethel Regional High School gym to mourn the passing of Eugene Buzzy Peltola, who died last week in a plane crash near St. Mary. Buzzy's wife, Mary Peltola, is Alaska's sole representative in Congress, and as KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello reports, the rest of the delegation, as well as Alaska's governor, flew into town on Saturday to pay their respects.
It's mostly cloudy and chilly outside, but inside the gymnasium it's warm and packed with people here to mourn the loss of Eugene Peltola Jr. He goes by Buzzy, and he died earlier this week in a plane crash. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Honor Guard finished the ceremonial march with the flag to Buzzy's wooden casket, folded it, and then handed it to Mary Peltola. She was stoic throughout the ceremony and clutched the flag as longtime family friend Anna Hoffman read a eulogy.
Buzzy has filled the bleachers in this gym once again.
She says he was born hardwired for success.
His unique and distinctive identity connected him with friends and family across the entire state.
She described him as an accomplished hunter, athlete, and provider. But above all else, Hoffman says Buzzy loved being a father.
Just for all his accomplishments, he truly, being father to his children, was really the dearest thing to his heart, and that was the role he was proudest of.
He and Mary Peltola had a blended family of 7 children. The funeral was originally supposed to be in Bethel's Immaculate Conception Catholic Church, but had to be moved to accommodate the crowd. More than 500 people showed up.
I don't know when I've seen this many people pack this gym.
Senator Lisa Murkowski says she isn't surprised by this turnout.
And I think that's a true statement of love for Buzzy.
Buzzy Peltola Jr. had a long career in public service in Bethel. In 2022, he retired from leading the Alaska Division of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. But decades before he took that position, he began working for the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge in 1984. Ultimately, he became the refuge manager in 2008, a dream job for him because he wanted his children to grow up in Bethel.
You can see leaders from a mile away, and Buzzy has not only been a leader in this region, but he's been a leader statewide. He knew how important being connected to the land and the resource was. He lived it, and he shared that. And I think the absence of his leadership is going to leave a void here.
Buzzy Peltola Jr. was flying a load of moose meat from a remote hunting camp when his plane crashed about 65 miles from the village of St. Mary's. Steve Wachowski, who described Buzzy as a dear friend, says he died doing something he loved.
And as one of his dear friends, I know he's in a better place smiling down on us. And so I know my family's going to miss his moose meat and blueberry jam.
Many people struggle to make sense of Peltola Jr.'s tragic death, including Governor Mike Dunleavy.
I just was talking to Gene about 2.5 weeks ago in the Kenai, and a lot of folks don't realize this, but in Kotzebue, in the 90s, Gene was our neighbor. Gene lived across the street from us because he was working for Fish and Wildlife, but I've had many interactions with Gene here over the last couple years.
Dunleavy says Peltola Jr.'s death was a shock to everybody.
It's unfortunate, sad, but Mary's tough, and she's going to have a lot of people around her to help her out and the family. So we're here today to honor the family. We're here today to honor Gene, and we just hope and pray that everything goes well, and family and Mary are able to work through this awful thing that's happened.
After the service concluded, the casket was open for a community viewing. One by one, everyone in attendance waited to say their final goodbyes. Peltola personally thanked everyone as they filed. Peltola Jr. was laid to rest at Bethel Memorial Cemetery, where several Alaska bush planes conducted a flyover in a missing man formation. At Bethel Regional High School, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Last year, RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus, sent many Alaskans to the hospital. But this year, infants, who are among the most vulnerable to the virus, have access to a new immunization. And as early as next week, Alaskans will be able to get the new COVID vaccine. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports.
RSV usually feels like a common cold, but it's more risky for people over 60 years old and infants. Last year was the first year that older adults could get a vaccine for it, and this is the first year infants have access to an immunization, too. Sarah Aho is the immunization program manager for the state of Alaska. She says this new immunization, nirsevimab, could save infant lives.
Nirsevimab can reduce the risk of hospitalization by up to 80%. So that is just an incredible reduction. No one wants to see their baby in a hospital, and that can be struggling to breathe, that can be even death. So I think nirsevimab is an incredible tool that we've never had before that's available to all children in Alaska.
Nirsevimab is recommended for babies under 8 months and older for babies who are more vulnerable. That includes babies who are immunocompromised or who are of American Indian or Alaska Native heritage. Aho says Alaskans can also expect to see new mRNA COVID vaccinations in Alaska as soon as the week of September 18th. She says the vaccines are no longer considered boosters, but are a yearly formulation.
You can think of it kind of like the flu vaccine that's reformulated every year to match what scientists are expecting to see in the communities. And that's kind of what's happened with COVID vaccines this fall.
Aho says the National Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices debated whether they should recommend this new vaccine only for those at high risk of complications from COVID, but ultimately they decided to recommend it for everyone 6 months and older. Aho says flu vaccines are already available throughout the state, and this year older adults can get a higher dose of the vaccine to give their immune system an extra boost of protection. People under 2 and over 65 are the most vulnerable age groups. Aho says for prevention, Alaskans should take the typical precautions. That means washing hands, staying at home if you're sick, avoiding sick people, covering your cough, and not touching your face. And Aho says it's too early to know whether this winter will be a bad one for viruses and infections. She says people can find out where to get vaccinations by calling their pharmacy or going to vaccinate.alaska.gov or vaccines.gov. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
As a record-breaking cruise season in Sitka comes to a close, and the promise of another equally busy summer on the horizon in 2024, some Sitkans are wondering how and if Sitka can sustain its tourist boom. Now a group of Sitkans is calling for a cap on the number of cruise passengers next year. They want to put that question out to the voters in a special election this winter. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Sitkan Larry Edwards has drafted a ballot initiative before. In 1995, the former pulp mill employee organized an effort to limit clear cutting.
It was to establish a zone within 35 miles of downtown that would be clear-cut free. And it lost by 4 votes.
He hopes his newest initiative doesn't meet the same fate. When asked whether cruise tourism is more or less extractive than logging, he smiles and says he'll have to think about that. Either way, he thinks it too should be limited.
It's just absolute chaos. I feel that the cruise industry thinks it's the planning director of the city and that we have to march to its orders. I think we need to take control back.
This summer, cruise ships brought around 560,000 people to Sitka, breaking last year's new record and more than doubling any year before that in Sitka's history. Edwards thinks it's time to ask Sitkans where the bar should be.
There have been a number of surveys done that have shown that about two-thirds of people in town think it's way over the top, and has been for quite a while. It's been controversial since the 1990s, the early 1990s even. And nobody's really ever asked the people of the city of Sitka what they want and asked them to vote on some number. This is the first, and someone had to stick their neck out to do it.
For the last few months, Edwards has been quietly drafting an ordinance that would ask voters to decide whether Sitka should establish a port district on its road system and limit cruise visitation to 240,000 people next year. He's using Bar Harbor, Maine as a template. Like Sitka, Bar Harbor's cruise ship dock is privately owned. And last November, voters approved an initiative to cap cruise traffic, which could take effect next summer, pending litigation.
The initiative set a flat limit of 1,000 persons per day, crew plus passengers that would be allowed to get off of any number of cruise ships that came to town. That passed 2-1, so it's very stringent. And what I have in this initiative is much more relaxed than that. And rather than just having a flat number, there's some logic to the numbers that are in it.
And the logic is averages. Edwards took the last 20 pre-pandemic years of cruise traffic with passenger counts over 200,000 and made the average the cap. The ordinance also includes a weekly cap of just over 13,000, as well as daily limits. It also would require the cruise companies to secure permits with the city and provide the city with daily updated data on passenger and crew counts. Edwards turned the ordinance into City Hall on Friday morning with the signatures of 44 other sponsors. As of press time, Municipal Administrator John Leach hadn't seen the initiative, so he couldn't comment on its specifics. But he'd anticipated that a ballot proposition was coming down the pike. The same day, Leach published a letter addressing the city's response to tourism, warning that a ballot initiative to limit tourism comes with economic, constitutional, and legal concerns.
My hope was that we, as the city, would get more of an opportunity to continue working with the stakeholders. We had hoped that our tourism task force and the great work that we're doing there would have an opportunity to take hold and produce something, because I think an agreement with stakeholders that's not so restrictive is the better path forward. So knowing that that conversation was taking place, I felt like this was the appropriate time to get the information out there and kind of let everybody know what the risks are and what the concerns are with more restrictive measures.
He worries that any ballot initiative to limit cruise traffic could lead to litigation. That's been the case in Bar Harbor, where local business owners sued the city. A federal judge is expected to issue a ruling in the case soon.
There is a big litigation risk, and the way we're going to have to pay for that litigation, when and if it comes this way, is right out of our general fund. And our general fund is what pays for our public schools, it pays for our infrastructure, and it pays for our public safety. So the litigation costs are going to have to come from somewhere if we get to a place where stakeholders decide to pursue this in a legal matter.
Leach feels that the city is doing what it can to respond to the influx. In addition to the work of the Tourism Task Force that the Assembly established earlier this year, Leach is collaborating with other Southeast city managers with plans to develop an agreement with the cruise industry, similar to the recent Memorandum of Understanding Juneau struck. But Edwards thinks Sitka needs to respond faster. He believes the ordinance is pro-tourism, pro-Sitka, just trying to find the right size for it. And it's meant to be a stopgap.
The idea is to give Sitka the relief it needs for 2024. And then win or lose, it's going to get some good discussion going. If it wins, it'll be in place for a year. And then after that, in the interim, we can be working as a community towards what we want to do more longer term for 2025 and beyond.
Whether Edwards' initiative will make it on the ballot yet remains a question. First, he has to collect just over 800 signatures, a third of the voters in the last municipal election. He has 3 months to do that, but he hopes to knock it out in 3 weeks. Then, the ballot prop must be vetted by the city. If it gets the green light, Sitkins could be voting on cruise limits in a special election by early December. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
An unidentifiable golden orb was found deep in the Gulf of Alaska by a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration research ship mapping the ocean floor late last month. Scientists are unsure of what it is and have no idea when answers could be available. But as KMXT's Brian Venois reports, discovering things new to science is an everyday occurrence aboard this vessel.
The crew of the Okeanos Explorer found the orb late last month, and it ended up making national headlines for stumping the ship's scientists. Sam Candio is an expedition coordinator aboard the NOAA ship.
I'm not even sure that that was the most interesting thing on that dive. We aboard pretty much forgot about it. And then once it started getting all the media attention, it was just like, oh, this is what everybody's focused on.
Candio says they had no idea the public would be so fascinated by it. Researchers still haven't been able to identify the golden orb.
We don't know what it is, and I haven't gotten any compelling ideas from people ashore. But a lot of the theories right now are kind of the same ones that we had when we first came across it. Could be some sort of sponge, maybe a coral. I'm on the egg case train.
It was found about 2 miles deep on the ocean floor during the ship's work along Alaska's coastline this year. Underwater, the orb looked a bit more circular and had kind of a golden shine, but when the drone brought a sample to the surface, it was a matte brown and had a flaky texture with a hard center. Scientists aboard the ship took several photos and ran tests, but Candio says the crew will have to send it to the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History for further analysis.
All of our samples, we took a lot this expedition. We got a lot of things that are new to science, which is really exciting. And so we're processing them, making sure that we get them all packed away safely.
He says the crew was also intrigued by the egg, but on that particular dive, they were more fascinated by seeing octopi tending to eggs. That's previously been a rare sight. The Okeanos Explorer is about to complete its work in Alaska. The ship's last stop is in Seward, and the crew will head to San Francisco for the winter. Candio says he was glad to visit so many places around the state.
Just seeing how incredible all the life and the landscapes and the geology and how diverse and beautiful it was, with crazy coral forests and chemosynthetic communities and pretty much everything you could hope to see. It's just amazing to see that both on land and at sea.
The boat is scheduled to begin mapping waters around Hawaii next year. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Investors are betting interest rates will not change. I'm Novosofo with a Marketplace Minute. Federal Reserve policymakers meet this week, and there's a 98% chance they'll leave rates unchanged. That's based on futures trading tied to the central bank's benchmark rate. The Fed decides on Wednesday. The United Auto Workers Union resumes contract negotiations today with Detroit's Big Three automakers as a limited strike enters its fourth day. The two sides remain far apart on key issues. The state of California is suing several major oil companies for allegedly downplaying the risks of climate change. Earlier this year, the Supreme Court declined to move similar lawsuits from state to federal courts, which are considered tougher for plaintiffs. I'm Novosofo with a Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Vermont Tourism. Trip ideas and planning tools available at vermontvacation.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 18th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:46. It will set again at 8:19. That will give us 12 hours and 34 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 72 degrees, set in 1925, and the record low was 32, set in Chile, 1971. Currently 51 degrees under fair skies. It's a nice day, but blustery at the airport there, showing west winds steady at 20, gusting to 30. They do have 10 miles of visibility. And this afternoon, more clear skies, high near 55, northwest 20 to 30. Clear skies tonight, low around 44, northwest winds 15 to 25. And for tomorrow, rain in the afternoon with increasing clouds tomorrow, high near 54, south winds to 15, gusting as high as 20. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon that will happen at 4:25 here on the east side, the 8.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:48 tonight of 1/3 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:55, just 5 minutes to 5, and be 14.3 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:19 p.m. of 1/10. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 44, date issued 10 a.m. on September 15th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 19th until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st in the Intercarlic section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, September 19th until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st at Carlic Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255101. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Iakulik, Outer Carlic, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Dead Man, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the Northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, and Southwest of Fognak sections of the, and Northeast Fognak sections of the Fognak District, and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest Fognak section of the Fognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of a beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 252105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record of phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles. Small craft advisory through tonight. Northwest 30 today with 7-foot seas. For tonight, west 25, diminishing to 15 after midnight, 8-foot seas. And for tomorrow, south 20 and 6-foot seas, with Tuesday night bringing us southeast 25 and 7-foot seas. Over on the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today with northwest winds to 25 knots, gusting to 40 out of Basin Passes, seas to 6 feet. For tonight, west 20, subsiding to, I guess, 5-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet. Southeast 20 tomorrow with 3-foot seas, and east 20 Tuesday night with 5-foot seas in the Shelikof. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board is having a meeting and tour this afternoon at 4 p.m. at the Verona Park office at the park at 1222 Chichinoff Street. It's open to the public. And for more information, call the office at 907-486-8670. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room number F-140 of the Old High School Wing. For more information, contact the Secretary of the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. And if you care about crab or bycatch, or both, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang and Deputy Commissioner Rachel Baker, who sits on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, are visiting Kodiak tomorrow night. They're coming for a town hall on bycatch, and they're going to give updates on the Gulf of Alaska Tanner Crab Survey as well. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow night at the Koniak Building over on Near Island. So be there or be square. 6:30 p.m. Tuesday night, Koniak Building, updates on the Gulf of Alaska Tanner Crab and bycatch-related issues being addressed by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. And be sure to tune in tomorrow to Talk of the Rock when Jared Griffin will be speaking with Michelle Wetzel, nonprofit expert and author of the new book, So You Have to Start a Nonprofit, Now What? Wetzel is also the creator of the 15-day Create Your Own Best Nonprofit Challenge, So if you ever had the desire to start a new nonprofit but were never quite sure how to get going, tune in tomorrow to Talk of the Rock at 12:30 p.m. right here on KMXT.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.